Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Zenas Baer. I represent Ben Weiland, the appellant. The appeal is here before this court on a grant of summary judgment to PLCC, a financer of livestock. Weiland has a custom feeding business that he does in the ordinary course. The summary judgment granted priority to the PLCC's operating loan over Weiland's feeder's lien, which I believe that there is no dispute, in the record at least, that the court presumed Weiland had a valid Minnesota feeder's lien under 514966. The decision by the district court deprived Weiland of the benefits of the feeder's lien. Now, there are two issues that I'd like to address today. The first is whether or not there are material factual disputes as to Weiland's intent and knowledge of the feeder's lien. And secondly, the issue of consideration for a waiver of a statutory lien. So the facts are briefly, PLCC financed cattle for Duden, who placed them on Weiland's feedlot for feeding. They were there from May 2016 to May 2017. The unpaid feed bill is about $150,000 or in that area. After the cattle were placed on Weiland's feedlot, PLCC forwarded a blank, non-completed waiver form, which is reproduced at page 8 of the addendum. And it was signed by Weiland only after promises were made that he had to sign it in order to get assurance that he would be paid. There was no waiver signed in favor of Duden, the owner of the cattle. The waiver only went to PLCC. So Duden is still the owner of the cattle, or at least the nominal owner of the cattle. The way the...
What difference does that make?
The difference is... I'm sorry, I'm losing paper all over the place. The difference is that PLCC was the financer. Their loan documents, as identified in Loan 407, allow and require Duden to have sufficient feed to fatten the cattle. That's provided in those loan documents, Loan 407. So Duden has these cattle. He, under the obligations of his loan, says that he grants a security interest to PLCC for the feed on those cattle. So that, it makes a difference in whether or not there was a waiver of the statutory lien, at least as to Duden's interest in the cattle. And we believe that that in and of itself should be sufficient to reverse the district court. There does not appear to be any dispute that there was, in fact, a perfected feeder's lien under 514966 because Weiland fed cattle, he cared for them, he provided nutrition and medical supplies. And under the teaching of Prophet Pork from this court, cited, I think, by both parties, a feeder's lien takes priority over all other liens. And even the district court said that if the feeder's lien is valid, Weiland has priority. If the feeder's lien is not valid, then PLCC has priority. So that's the issue then. The district court, it determined, though, that the district court ruled that Weiland had a valid feeder's lien, but he could not enforce it because he had signed the waiver. And let's look at the waiver. That's the first issue that we want to discuss. And a waiver, this is a recall that this is a statutory lien that is being waived. And under the teachings of Franzen versus Ford Motor Company, this court has said, at least this is the Supreme Court, I think, has said that a waiver of a statutory right requires the expression of an intention not to insist upon what the law affords. Continuing on with the Franzen, the court says that the party advocating a waiver can meet its burden of showing that the waiving party knew about and intended to waive the statutory right. And we don't have any evidence in this case to suggest that there was even a disclosure of the statutory right or an intentional waiver of that statutory right. Because the form does not include language that says a feeder's lien. In fact, if you read the form, it is generic, and it says it is in consideration of promissory notes to be entered into between PLCC and Duden at some point in the future for the purchase of 1,000 head of cattle. And if you look at the loan 407, which is reproduced at, I believe, page 10 of the addendum, it identifies the cattle to be 1,250-pound cattle.
So let me ask you, counsel, about at the time that Mr. Weiland signed the waiver, had he seen the underlying loan agreement or agreements?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
No, not that I'm aware of.
So how... So that didn't, in whatever 407 or 404, or any of the agreements said, didn't inform him as to what he was signing.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
So we can't really look at them to ascertain what he understood at the time.
No. In fact.
What
he was, he testified in deposition that the form was either faxed or emailed to his wife's computer. It was printed off. He signed it the same day because he was told by Keith Meyergard from PLCC that he had to sign it if he wanted to get paid for any of his feed.
So when we look at the, you refer to the waiver and consent as being blank, but I just want to clarify at what you have at Addendum 8, which like fills in commonly known as, et cetera, the premises and stuff. It wasn't blank. This is what it said, right?
This is what it said, yes. Yeah.
Then,
I'm sorry if I... What I was referring to in the blank is the
description
feeding
of the
costs and also the cattle itself.
Okay, so when we look at... So I think your argument is he didn't understand... Well, maybe you have a couple arguments. One is he didn't understand what this waiver is about. He thought it was just something he had to do in order to get paid. Okay, that's one argument you seem to be making. A second argument you seem to be making is he didn't think it related to the cattle on his premises because at the start of it says to be entered into between so-and-so and so-and-so for advanced funds for the purchase of 1,000 plus or minus head of cattle.
So that's some future date.
Why did he think he was... So he just said he had taken this cattle. They're on his premises.
There's about 200 head on his premises.
And producers contacts him and says, you have these cattle. We need to have this waiver signed. What other cattle would it be? Like, why wouldn't he think? Is there sufficient evidence to raise a genuine issue of fact as to whether, in fact, they were talking about the cattle that he had gotten that producers was contacting him about?
Well, the form, the producer's own form, says collateral identification, and it's supposed to identify the collateral. And under the loan agreements, it requires the owner of the cattle to tag them, either with PLCC's tags or their own tag. That was not done. There was nothing filled in about collateral identification. All that he...
When you say nothing filled in, it says branded PLCC, ear tags PLCC?
Yes, those are the identification of the cattle. That would, typically you would have, they would be either be branded PLCC, so you know that these are the cattle that are being financed, or they are from tagged by a different method.
And are you saying that the evidence shows, in fact, that those very cattle were not branded or tagged? Is that the price?
None of them had tags. None of the record shows that none of the cattle that came in there were tagged or marked or identified as PLCC cattle.
So you're saying that is evidence then that he didn't understand, Mr. Weiland, that he was signing this waiver with respect to those cattle because they didn't look like the cattle, the collateral that's described?
I think based on the questions, Your Honor, it seems as though the cattle were delivered because there was an agreement between Duden and Weiland to take some cattle to feed them out to market weight. So the cattle come there, and then several weeks later, he receives a call from PLCC saying that if you want to get paid, you have to sign this waiver. So he signs the waiver.
The district court, in its memorandum on your addendum four, as a statement, this was not the first time Weiland encountered a feedlot waiver. In Weiland's own prior lending relationship with PLCC, the same forms were required from feeders caring for Weiland's cattle. Is that a disputed fact? I mean,
that
it seems to be a factual finding.
But that may well be accurate, but signing this as a blank form does not inform Weiland of his statutory right under 514-966, or does it indicate an intent to waive that right? The only thing you can draw from that is that this form was signed. Apparently, everybody got paid. So Weiland may think that that is the way you have to do it to get paid. So he signed the form, not knowing that it was, as is argued, a waiver of the statutory right to a lien.
I mean, my take from the phrasing of the district court is that that's an inference, that he understood what he was signing because he was familiar with this form and had used it in prior dealings.
That's the disputed issue of fact, is whether what inference can you draw from his prior use? That inference could be that this was used in prior transactions. He got paid. He was intent on getting paid during this transaction, so he signed it and sent it back. And that brings us to this issue right here. And I would say that waiver is generally a question of fact, and it's rarely to be inferred as a matter of law. That's the Carlson versus Duran case cited at page 2 of the reply memorandum. And in this case, you have a feedlot owner or a feedlot operator who receives cattle, and under the course of business that he was familiar with in prior transactions, he was called by the financier saying, if you want to get paid, you have to sign this. So he signed it, and at the end, he found out that it indeed was a comprehensive waiver of all of his rights. Now, I would point out that it wouldn't take a lot of effort by PLCC to identify that MnStat 514.966 is impaired by this waiver.
Is there any case law requiring a specific citation to the statute when there's a statutory lien waiver?
No, I have not been able to find any, Your Honor. I believe that this case is a case that brings into focus, though, the common law of waiver, which requires intentional waiver of a known right. And that's what's lacking in this case, in this feedlot waiver and consent. There is no description of that right that is to be waived.
And then I just want to follow up on something you said. I want to be clear. So Mr. Weiland knew that producers were the financiers of the cattle that were actually on his property, but your argument is he didn't understand the waiver to be applying to those cattle that he knew producers had.
He was under the impression that PLCC was, in fact, the financier of the cattle. But I don't know if that was clear to him before the call came from PLCC on or about June 6th, 2016, when he was informed that he had to sign this waiver in order to get paid. So my request for the court would be to remand with instructions, and I understand that the context of this case probably is not one where you'll be willing to go out and say you have to have consideration for a waiver. But that is if it comes up here again, and should it become a case, I believe that that is, in fact, a valid argument and should be treated the same. Feedlot owners should not be treated any different for the improvement of cattle than mechanics lien providers for real property. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Baer. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Jeff Bregelman. I'm a lawyer with Gislason and Hunter at New Ulm, Minnesota, and I represent Producers Livestock Credit Corporation in this case. I guess, first of all, I think the record is pretty clear on what Mr. Meyergird said and did not say to Mr. Weiland regarding this regarding this waiver. I don't think the record supports any claim that Mr. Meyergird made any representation to Mr. Weiland that this waiver was necessary in order for him to get paid. The phrase that we see referred to in the brief is Mr. Weiland saying, the way the waiver was explained to me is that I would be assured a lien against the cattle for feed expenses. That's a statement Mr. Weiland made in one of his answers to interrogatories. I asked him about this statement during his deposition, and for the record, this begins at page 20, goes on to page 21 of Mr. Weiland's deposition. I asked him about that statement because I wanted to know, well, who told you that? And what he says is, well, that was really my interpretation of the waiver, not something Mr. Meyergird told him. That's what he says, that's how I interpreted it. I read it quickly. That's what I thought until later on I had an attorney look at it, and they said, no, that's not what it is.
Was he asked about his prior familiarity with these waivers?
I don't think Mr. Meyergird asked him about it, but it is clear that he was familiar with it. And the record establishes this, Your Honor, through his deposition testimony and through the November 14 affidavit of Keith Meyergird. These players raise cattle together sometimes. There were prior instances when Ben Weiland and Perry Duden got together, bought a group of cattle together, financed it with producers, and placed them at a feedlot down in Redwood Falls. And in that instance, that feedlot operator had to sign the same form, a feedlot waiver. And it was a condition of Mr. Duden and Mr. Weiland's loan at that time. We presented evidence of another instance where Mr. Weiland financed cattle from producers, placed them at Perry Duden's farm. So now Perry Duden is the feedlot operator. And again, the loan arrangement required that Perry Duden sign a feedlot waiver in connection with Mr. Weiland's loan. So,
that train of thought is persuasive.
Pardon?
That train of thought is persuasive. And based on these other circumstances, we should assume that Mr. Weiland knew what he was doing when he signed this waiver. That's essentially the argument, right?
Sure.
Okay. But doesn't that require sort of weighing of the evidence and drawing conclusions from the evidence to get there? And is that appropriate at the summary judgment stage?
I don't think it requires weighing when the document itself is clear. And that's essentially what the district court did.
Okay, I have questions about whether the document is clear, because I'm just looking at it, and the document refers to funds for the purchase of 1,000 head plus or minus of cattle. And we agree that he had about 200 head of cattle, not 1,000 head of cattle. And then it says located on the following described real estate, and it simply says commonly known as Benedict Weiland, located in Polk County. That presumably refers to his land?
Right, his feedlot.
His feedlot. And then the document says that the collateral we're talking about is branded PLCC with ear tags PLCC, but the cattle did not have those brands or ear tags.
Okay, I'll try to address
that's all. That's a question. I don't know, but that's what I've heard from the other side.
Right. Okay. Well, first of all, the collateral is described in the third line, paren, quote, the capital C collateral. It's not the funds. It's 1,000 head more or less of cattle. All right? And that phrase is capitalized. It's used in the next paragraph. Okay? He consents to the feeding of the capital C collateral on the premises. He waives all rights and claims against the collateral now located or to be located. He signs this at a time when some of the cows have already arrived. All right. And he testified in his deposition that in this feedlot, there was only one other person who had a few cows there, and they were of a different type and of a different color. There was absolutely no issue or problem in identifying which cows were paired.
The document from which you're reading, you just read now located or to be located.
Sure. It's in the, okay, so in the waiver form, after the sentence that you just read, commonly known as Benedict Weiland, okay, in that next paragraph.
Paragraph, thank you.
Third line.
Got it, thank you.
Okay, against the capital C collateral now located or to be located on the capital P premises. Now, in his deposition,
I heard you say that collateral is defined in the first paragraph.
Right.
And the definition of what is the definition of collateral? Where does it start in that first paragraph? Because it says, after borrower, for the advance of funds for the purchase of 1,000 head of cattle. Collateral. How is that clear that it's the 200 that are already on his farm, if that's how many were already on his feedlot?
Well, there may have been 200 that were there on the date this thing was signed, but over time, more cattle arrived. More cattle were shipped onto Ben Weiland's feedlot. So, and what the parties anticipated was that there might be up to 1,000 head of cattle there, more or less. Not 283 head of Holsteins or any particular amount. And as I said, Mr. Weiland was clear in his deposition. I mean, he understood. He knew these are Perry Duden's cows. They're on my farm. This isn't like a giant feedlot where, you know, 20 different investors have cows in different pens throughout the feedlot. It's a feedlot that he has on his farm. And I mean, there was no confusion. You know, in fact, he said He claimed that when these cattle were finally shipped off his farm and taken to the auction barn and sold, he attended the auction and claimed that he could identify the cows that were sold at the auction, which ones had been at his farm. And I'd say, Your Honor, that...
I'm just concerned. I mean, what I find about this case, I'm not exactly sure the paradigm. That's one question. You refer to contract principles of how we should look just at, I think in your brief you talk about we should look at the four corners of it and if it's unambiguous, you know. But on the other hand, you're not arguing it's a contract that requires consideration.
Right.
It's a waiver. And so what we should be looking at is knowing it intentionally. And although it might be very thin of, I mean, when you look at the first paragraph, it's very much in a future tense when we just look at the language. So the question is, could one reasonably infer from that language that it's not the present cows, it's, you know, future ones? And isn't, as even if it's a thin argument that he didn't understand it's the cows there, isn't it still a factual question? I guess that's my question about this case that boils down to. Isn't there a factual question, albeit maybe not a very, you would think,
I don't think there is any genuine issue of material fact in this case as to whether or not this waiver covered Perry Duden's cows on Ben Weiland's feedlot. When you read this document and when you look at Mr. Weiland's own deposition testimony about what happened and what he knew was going on, all right, the only thing really... It, taken at his word, he may have misunderstood what he was signing. But that misunderstanding doesn't raise a genuine issue of material fact when the document itself is clear and says you are waiving.
What's the authority for that? If the question is whether he knowingly and intentionally waived, and you're saying, well, let's assume for a minute he didn't knowingly do it because he thought it was something else. Why then do we say, well, what's the authority for saying we just need to look at a written waiver and you can't argue that it wasn't knowing if it...
Well...
What's your case law authority? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Are you looking at contract law or waiver law?
Well, we cite the cases to contract interpretation because those are principles you apply anytime. You have to determine what's the legal effect of a writing that someone has signed. And I think under those general principles, when the intent can be discerned from the document, when it's clear, then I'm charged with having that knowledge. I'm charged with having knowledge of whatever is clearly stated in a document that I sign. I can't sign a document that clearly says one thing and then later say, I shouldn't be bound by that because that's not what I intended or not what I understood. And I think that's the basic analysis that the district court followed here.
Could you just confirm for me, because I think we started to address this, but I don't know if you answered it.
Mm-hmm.
The 200 or so head of cattle that were present when this was signed, were they or were they not branded and tagged PLCC?
I believe they were not. I don't think there's anything in the record that says that they were.
So then aren't we left with sort of an inconsistency within the waiver itself in the sense that, you know, the first paragraph says it's the cattle that are there. The last paragraph says, but it's cattle that are branded and tagged this way, and those cattle weren't branded and tagged that way. Doesn't a jury have to or a fact finder have to decide what this means given that inconsistency?
I don't think so, because of the collateral definition that is at the very beginning.
Okay, but the collateral definition that's at the very beginning is inconsistent with the collateral identification. So what do we do with that?
Well,
or we just say that's superfluous? We ignore the collateral identification section?
Okay. You know, let's realize this feeding cost section and collateral identification section, it's Ben Weiland certifying that this document is correct. I certify the above feeding cost, collateral location, and collateral identification are accurate. He chose not to complete them. And this, if you look at his deposition testimony, this was a point that I think was discussed with Mr. Meyerger, the point being, well, look, I've got cows coming, but I don't know for sure how many they're coming. And he may not have even known what his deal was going to be with Perry Duden at that point. How much am I going to charge him per day? He testified he knew that Perry Duden was responsible for the feed costs, that Perry Duden had his own line of credit at a bank, you know, to pay the feed costs. I would say, Your Honor, even if Ben Weiland had filled in, you know, let's say he knew at the time what he was going to charge Perry Duden for the feed, and he had filled that in, and he started putting ear tags on the animals as they came in, or he just chose not to tag them because he figured, well, it's not necessary. I know those are Perry Duden's cows. If he chose not to complete that, it takes nothing away from the rest of the document, which clearly says the collateral in this case are plus or minus up to 1,000 cows that are going to be on your farm. They're going to be owned by Perry Duden.
Okay, so your argument seems to be that, you know, even if there are some inconsistencies or some arguments, a reasonable mind could not disagree on how to read this waiver.
Correct.
Which would satisfy the summary judgment standard.
Yes.
It's not that we don't have any questions here. It's just that on the record as a whole, there's only one way to answer those questions.
No genuine issue of material fact. I'm still seeing a green light, so I want to...
You have a minute and 40 seconds.
I want to offer a couple of other comments, if I could. Please. This reference to loan 407, you're right, Ben Weiland didn't know. He hadn't seen Perry Duden's loan documents. He didn't know loan 407 from any other loan that Perry Duden had in place at the time. What's important, though, Your Honors, is that Of course, producer's security interest in this collateral doesn't arise from the promissory note. It arises from the security agreement that Perry Duden executed. That's one of the exhibits to our complaint. That's what created producer's security interest in this collateral, and that security interest covered all the collateral, and it secured all of Perry Duden's obligations, whether he had one note, two notes, or 20 notes. It was all cross-collateralized. So the security interest is not tied to a particular note or a particular group of cattle. On the consideration issue, there's a point in our brief that maybe I wasn't entirely clear and didn't state it very well. It suggests that you might have to remand to have the court determine whether there was consideration present in this case. You know, as I think about this, I think this court need not decide whether consideration is necessary to have a valid waiver, because on this record, it is clear that there was consideration for this waiver. I mean, Mr. Weiland ran his business as a feedlot. If producers hadn't financed these cattle, they wouldn't have been at his lot. There's evidence from his deposition that he received partial payments from Mr. Duden after the cattle came onto his lot. And then there's the whole estoppel argument that we presented on behalf of producers. Without this waiver, those cattle would have never been there, or if producers hadn't received the waiver, producers would have demanded its loan and the cattle would have been removed. And after receiving this waiver, the loan record shows that even under 407, producers did make additional advances for trucking expenses and hedging expenses that Mr. Duden incurred and that were financed through his arrangement with producers. So there is both consideration and estoppel here.
Thank you,
and
Mr.
Now Rangel. My time is up. Thank you.
We appreciate your argument. Any rebuttal, Mr. Baer?
Just a few points, Your Honor. Can I refer back to the authority of this court, Franzen versus Ford Motor, that it is the burden of PLCC to show that Weiland knew about the statutory rights that he was waiving and was aware of what those rights provided to him. And if we look at the waiver itself, there is no suggestion on the waiver itself that it involves a statutory feeder's lien. It is tied to one note, note 407, and in fact, this feedlot waiver and consent suggests it's written in contract language. It says, in consideration of the promissory note security agreement to be entered into between PLCC and Duden, you're going to waive these rights. That was not the fact scenario that was presented to Weiland when he signed this document. He had cattle already on his place. And we think that there are adequate factual disputes on what Weiland's knowledge and intent was when he signed this to require reversal to the district court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Baer. Thank you, Mr. Bregelman. Matter's been submitted.